Welcome, everyone, to the Healing of Agape this week. This is Eva Herr, and thank you for tuning in. Today we have with us a friend of mine from Atlanta. Her name is Joyce Reynolds, and she's written a new book called The Energy Connection. But first of all, we're going to address a significant problem in today's society, and I have a feeling that each one of you listening probably has a connection with this problem somewhere in your lives. Welcome, Joyce, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Eva. It's just my pleasure to be here.
So, tell us a little bit about who you are, a little bit about your book, and then we're going to speak about this topic, addictions.
Yes. Well, I'm called Joyce Reynolds, Motivator of One or a Thousand, but I always like to get myself off the hook right away. I can't motivate anyone to do anything. But what I can do, Eva, is set a climate of motivation and inspire people to look within themselves, to draw upon their time, their talents, their abilities, and their mind, and to make some decisions to move forward or to stay exactly where they are. Now, I wrote this book, The Energy Connection, back in 1986. I've been in this quest for quite some time. It's in its fourth printing. So it's been around for a long time, and it's still very popular and very current. People will say to me, Joyce, you wrote this book way back then. Well, I did, because I was so curious about universal laws and principles. And the book is about universal laws and principles, cause and effect, that everything is cause and effect. And it gives us a new perspective on how to look at cause and effect. We used to think that cause started out there. Well, now we know that cause starts in the mind. It starts with a thought, a feeling, a perception, idea, and that the results are made manifest in our outer world. So when we become aware of cause and effect and how it works in our life, we can have more control over our life. I write in the book that I actually did crash into alcoholism some 31 years ago in February of 2006. I'll have 31 years of sobriety. And I have learned a lot, Eva, in 31 years about sobriety, but also about living life, about universal laws, about this universe, this magnificent universe that we live in. And my perception, because everybody has their own perception, of how it works. And the way that I talk about it in my book is the way it works for me. And it has worked for thousands upon thousands of other people. I've traveled all over the world. I've been in Romania and Egypt, and I've been in London, England, of course, and Costa Rica, and just everywhere, China, Thailand, and where the tsunami was. Speaking, teaching, talking, meeting people, and I'll tell you something, it is a fascinating world out there.
Well, I was going to ask you, most people that get awakened to consciousness usually have to have a dark night of the soul, but you answered that before I could ask you. So my next comment is here is, I'm of the opinion that you don't have to have a dark night of the soul to wake up to consciousness.
I agree, but I think sometimes when you have that dark moment, that time, no matter what it is, whatever it is, the illness, the sickness, the alcoholism, the substance abuse, the sexual addiction, whatever it is, the death of somebody, whatever it is, I think what happens there is that we wake up.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what happens. But I believe that if people listen to what you're having to say,
that's right,
they don't have to go through
that. We've done it for them. We don't have to go through
it. They just listen.
That's right. That's right. And a lot of people just aren't willing to do that. And in a 12-step program or in a recovery program, we call that self-will run riot. That our will just runs riot. And we just decide we're going to do what we're going to do, and we're going to overcome. We're not going to get into any of these problems, or if we're into the problems, we're going to get out of the problems ourselves. We don't need help.
Well, before we go into actually what is addiction, tell us what happened to you that you can look back upon now and see that that was the start of your addiction before you were aware of what it was?
Yes. Well, I came from an ethnic family. I came from a father that was born in Germany and a mother that was first generation Polish. And they drank in the household. They drank alcohol, they had beer, they had wine, and that was a staple. When you had dinner, I could have what was called a little glass of beer, or I could have a little bit of wine. And nobody thought anything of that. So I grew up sipping and having these things. You know, the holiday season, and I was raised Catholic, with a lot of restrictions in my life, but one of the things that we did at the holidays was to drink peppermint schnapps, and I can remember doing that at the age of 3 and it burning going down my throat, but I can also remember feeling good when it was going down, but also the next day not feeling so good.
You remember that back that far?
I remember back that far. I can remember back that far. I actually took myself back in a lot of self-hypnosis, too, to remember. I can remember the first time that I had consciousness. I was putting on a little pair of shoes, and at that time we wore more of a high-top shoe, and I was lacing it up, and I remember tying my shoe and remember looking around the room and thinking, nobody here is inside of my head but me.
How old were you?
I was 3 years old.
That's amazing.
I was in Detroit, Michigan. That's where I grew up. So, consequently, my parents were somewhat dysfunctional. And, however, at the time I didn't know it, drank. And I said, early on, I want to get out of this house.
Were there behavior disorders?
Oh, yes. Behavior disorders. You know, we've just come out of the Christmas season, and for many alcoholics, and I talk about this in my classes, it's really amazing because there were always fights. There would be fights about the way the Christmas went up, or whether we were going to Christmas midnight mass. Of course, they were drunk. There would always be some major argument, and the next day, Eva, we'd pretend like nothing happened.
I don't know if it's even pretending or not even recognized because you're so conditioned.
You're so conditioned. I think you're
right.
It's normal. You just don't talk about it. It was interesting this Christmas season, after the holidays, I went into a supermarket and a woman was following me in, and a very nice looking woman, full of makeup on her face, full of makeup. And I looked at her. And I saw black and blue all around the eye. And my heart went out to her. And I thought, I know about that woman. I know what probably happened. Now, I'm not saying I knew exactly, but I had a hunch that she'd been in a fight. Somebody was drunk, because that's what always happens. You get into a fight, you get into fist fights, hitting, badgering, pushing around family members. And then you put makeup on the next day and pretend like nothing happened. Or, as you said, just it's the way of life.
So what happened to make you become aware that there was a problem?
Well, I drank, and I went the gamut of, back in my era, cocktail parties, lots of cocktail parties in the late 50s and 60s. Oh, that was the way it was. And I was married young, had a child almost right away, like 15, 16 months later, and started repeating my mother and dad's life.
Husband drank too?
My husband drank too. Mm-hmm.
So would you say that you tend to gravitate to someone like what you've been
doing? Oh, always. I have found this out in my teachings, and what I do is that we keep repeating the same subconscious programming, patterns, belief systems. I'll tell you a funny story. I have a woman that came to me, and she was wanting to get a divorce. And she said her husband was an alcoholic. He was no good. She couldn't wait to get him out of her life. So finally she went through and she came to me for consultation. And she had said to me, Joyce, she said, my divorce is final tonight. She said, my divorce is final, and she said, I'm going out to celebrate. And I said, well, that's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that. She said, well, I'm finally getting rid of that old man. Well, I didn't see this woman. And Eva, you know, about 6 months later, she came and she called and she said, I need an appointment. I need to see you right away. So she came in and I saw her and she said, I've got to get rid of this man. And I said, well, I thought that you did. She said, Joyce, let me tell you what I did. She said, remember the last time I saw you? She said, I was celebrating the divorce. She said, I went to a place called Johnny's Hideaway. Now, this happens to be a dance hall.
Here in Atlanta?
Here in Atlanta, Georgia. And she said, I went to Johnny's, and she said, I met this man, and I danced the night away, and I took him home with me. She said, Joyce, he stayed. She said, and I thought he was so wonderful. I thought he was so great. I was so happy I had another man in my life. She said, Joyce, he turned out to be just like my husband, an alcoholic. And she said, and this one won't even take out the garbage. What am I going to do?
Yeah, you have to change your patterns and your socializing and the people that you hang with. You change your life to get away from it.
You've got to do it. You know it, and I know it. It's got to take place. So, yes, we do create what we're familiar with, what the subconscious pattern is. We do create that. So I created another person just like my father, similar in many ways, and went on to create a very lovely lifestyle for myself. Lived in Detroit, came to Atlanta, and, of course, I was drinking beer and wine in Detroit and learned to drink this southern drink called bourbon and got hooked on bourbon and loved it, just loved it. Moved away, got very successful here, my former husband, and we moved away and I moved to Ohio, and I remember taking my first morning drink. And when I took my first morning drink, that was it.
Right, chills coming.
2 weeks I was hooked, and my liver began to swell, and I began to drink daily. And I started losing my hair, my skin started turning yellow, my eyes yellow. A cirrhosis of the liver came on, severe alcohol poisoning, and so many symptoms. Went into the hospital and had a cirrhosis of the liver. Stopped drinking. Had a hard time doing that.
How long had you drank at that point?
I had drank, I believe it was about 25 years alcoholically.
Now, did the thing that caused you to wake up to it, was it your sickness or did your life start falling apart?
My life had fallen apart.
Well,
I had a death experience. For me, I went into the light. And I went and I moved out of my body and I went up into a bright light.
What happened?
When I was in the hospital, I was being fed intravenously. They told me I was dying. I discussed the method of what I wanted to do with my body, be cremated. I wanted my former husband flew airplanes at the time. I wanted him to fly and take my body over the ocean.
Now, how old were you at this point?
I was 44 years of age.
Because the people that's listening can't see you, but you're, what, 71?
70.
And I'm telling you, you look every day of 50 years old.
Thank you. Thank
I mean,
you.
I cannot believe you were 70 years old. You got this beautiful blonde hair and this smooth skin and this nice figure. What did you do to turn that, make that happen?
I turned it around because I looked totally different, completely different. And the way that I turned it around is by changing my thoughts. changing the way I view myself, changing my self-image. And when you change inside, you change outside also. There's, if you go to the library, you go to bookstores, any of our bookstores, go in and find a book on face reading. My face has totally changed as a result of my thoughts. Face reading is very fascinating. It's a science. And they tell us that as we have certain features in our face, they read out to be mean certain things in our life. Now, some people might laugh at this or scoff at this, but I have studied this, and it's fascinating because it really seems to be so. And so I started eating well. I got a spiritual program. I did go to a 12-step program. I did change everything about my life. I was a codependent. I had to learn to be an independent. My former husband handled the finances. I had to learn to handle my own finances. I had to learn to live my life 100% different.
Now, did you hit bottom and have to have nothing before you could start over?
Yes.
Again?
Yes.
So you started out with no money? And
I started out with very little money. I think at the time I had $40,000. Now, some might say that's a lot, but for me, raising a child and on my own, it
did
was
did you have job own. Skills at that time?
I had started in speaking. I was a speaker at the time. And I started teaching at Kennesaw College. I started doing motivational work. Body, mind, and spirit work. It just seemed to come to me. And I realized today, Eva, that the law of attraction, that principle, sets up a cause, brings in an effect. I have to allow the universe to handle details. This is the biggie, because I had to learn to live one day at a time.
Well, you know, you speak of the law of attraction and people think that's woo-woo or something because they can't see it. But there's science behind that.
Yes, there is.
There are electromagnetic fields that change frequency with voltage and amplitude based on your thoughts. And it causes what goes around to come around based on whether you oscillate protons or electrons in your brain. So it is a science.
And it's
not something that we talk about.
And it's lovely to know that. There is something, when I teach classes, when I talk about this, there is something so exciting about this. So exciting to think of yourself as a magnet.
That's right. And you know, another thing I think is that we don't have a thinking mechanism in our brain. Our brains, it's science. We do not think. It is a processor, binary processor, on or off. And if that's true, that means that what are we processing but the God force?
That's right.
So we must have faith that we are indeed God and as powerful as that being if we choose to be.
Absolutely. And you know, it's really interesting because the power, is always saying yes. If you say I'm fat, yes, you're fat. If you say I have no money, you have no money. If you say I'm worthless, yes, you create this worthless. Everything is a vibrational frequency, as you know, and we can be vibrating now down at this low vibration, or we can raise our consciousness and raise up to a higher vibrational frequency.
Now, let me ask you this. Some people say, well, you know, you get in a rut of conditioning for where you've been all of your life, and you're the people that you socialize with, the people that you're around conditioning. And when I say conditioning, I mean the schools, the churches, your social clubs that you interact with. If you're interacting at the VW, or what is that called? Is that what it is? The veterans thing where people go and dance and drink.
Yes,
VFW. You change where you go, right?
Yes.
Give the people an idea of how would they go and meet somebody if they decided, I'm not going to do this drinking thing anymore. What would they do?
Well,
where would they go?
What would happen is, first of all, they would not have a strong interest in it. They would start to see the folly. If I get sober today, if I'm sober today, and I accumulate several days of being sober, clean and sober is what we call it. So if I accumulate several days of that, I'm already going to be thinking differently. If I'm going to some sort of a treatment, if I'm in a treatment program, a 12-step program, a rehab center, If I am somewhere where I'm getting help, because you've got a lot of people who don't drink, that once did drink, who I call are on a dry drunk. Their behavior is, there's an insanity to the behavior of someone who drinks a lot of alcohol. And the biggest problem, and I'll get back to that, answering that question, but the biggest problem with somebody who has an alcohol problem is denial. They deny that they have a problem. If I say to somebody, how much do you drink? They generally, and they drink quite a bit, they generally will lie and tell you they drink less than what they do. And I know the listening audience can understand that. But to get back to your question of living one day at a time and accumulating, you start to chum with the people that you're surrounded with. You bond, and people don't understand how an alcoholic can help another alcoholic and how a non-alcoholic doesn't understand an alcoholic.
They think they can just quit because that you just love me enough to quit.
Just quit. That's right. It is a disease. There is a predisposition for it, and the disease is activated every time we take a drink. So the more that we don't take a drink or substance, a chemical, the more that we can get away from it, the stronger we're going to be. But one drink will take us back to the beginning. You're right. You're right. So it takes you right back there. So consequently, you're back square one.
I think I have a friend who's going through this very same situation with the man that she loves. Excuse me. And she'll say, just don't do it anymore. And I don't believe that people understand that when you crave a French fry or the potato chips, or that box of chocolates when a woman's on her period, that is nothing compared to what that addiction
makes
you crave, is it? I haven't experienced it, but I did grow up with an alcoholic.
That's right. Well, let me tell you this. This is so important. Alcoholics have what we call black holes. We feel empty inside. And when we take the drink, it expands us. Just even the smallest drink will expand us, and it opens up and dilates the blood vessels. Our aura, our energy field, which is the aura, expands, and we are funnier, we are more outgoing, have more wisdom, we can have sex, we can be affectionate, all of these things. And that's what people do when they've been drinking. You go to a party, you see people drinking, you see the most distinguished man making a fool of himself, hugging and kissing on some other woman or somebody arguing or yelling, etc. The next day, here's what happens. They have to sober up. The alcohol is being burned out of the body. The aura goes in. It tightens in, the blood vessels restrict, and the person has a hangover.
And that's another thing that you're talking about, this aura contracting and expanding. We have an electromagnetic field that when it's healthy, it'll stand at about 6 feet. If it expands, one of the things that happens, I believe, is your consciousness loses cohesion. And when I say consciousness, I mean how well you know who you are on the inside. And it expands, so it makes you lose presence of who you are and behave ridiculously.
Yes.
And so to in order to ascend or raise your soul or what we say, become enlightened or raise your consciousness, that field has to be cohesive and stuck together.
Yes.
So in order to raise your consciousness, to get a grip, you must let that happen, even though you have to suffer, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. You know, the interesting thing here, here's another tidbit that's so interesting. The conscious mind is altered when we take the drink, the drug, whatever the substance. Our seeing is altered. Our smelling is altered. Our hearing. We don't hear. Our whole five senses are altered. The way that we speak is altered. I can always tell when somebody was calling me and and in my drinking days, if they've been drinking and I hadn't, because they were talking and slurring their words, etc., and they had no thought. The conscious mind is impaired. The subconscious mind is still awake and still registering everything that's going on. Now, you could get, and this is what I used to do. I would go out to a party or go to a function, and somebody would invite me to dinner the next day, or lunch, or a week from now, and I would write down the date because I would know that I was going to forget. And I'd write down, okay, and then the next day when I sobered up, I'd go to read it, and sometimes I couldn't even read my writing. But I'd call the person, now when did we say we were going to have lunch? When did we say we were going to do this? So if I were to be hypnotized, all of that information would be in there. Now, I do what is called Rohan therapy, and I've worked with a lot of people in my sobriety who are alcoholics. I have had people who have women, one woman that I think of particularly, that found herself in a bar. She was having some drinks. She went into a blackout. When she went into the blackout, she picked up some men.
And when you say black, I know what you mean, but so now...
A blackout is when you don't remember. You're functioning as though you are just normal, but you won't remember what happened. She goes into a blackout. She meets some men. And the next thing she knows is she's back. She's in that bar, but she's looking at her watch, and it's 5 hours later. Now, she doesn't know what happened, but she goes home and she tries to sleep. She's disheveled. She knows she's had sex, but she doesn't know with who. She doesn't know what happened. She doesn't know anything. This will interfere with this woman's consciousness
for
the rest of her life. Now, when I do the Rohan therapy and take them back, this particular woman suddenly realized what happened because the memory comes up. The energy is information. The energy is released. It comes up in pictures. It comes up in feelings, etc. And she realizes that she's been gang raped. She meets these guys. She gets in their car. She takes off with them. She goes. She has sex with them. And then they dump her back off at the...
She's lucky they dumped her off.
She's lucky they dumped her off. But how many people are in blackouts and don't let you know that they're in blackouts?
They don't even know themselves.
They don't even know themselves. But many people, alcoholics, practicing alcoholics, will say, I lost 5 days. I don't know where I was for 5 days. I don't know where I was for a day. I don't remember getting on that airplane and flying to Las Vegas. They don't remember. They're not going to admit it, but they don't remember it.
Do you suppose one of the reasons people come addictions, for whatever reason, is because they are more sensitive to outside emotionals or emotions?
You know, we have the idea of someone who's an alcoholic is somebody on the streets. And certainly we do have substance abuse and alcoholics on the street. That is true. However...
But you have to admit... Usually, I don't know if you've ever stopped and talked to one,
but I have.
I go downtown to Atlanta. When I get depressed, there's an old drunk black man that sits in an alley downtown, and when I get to feeling bad, I go find this man. He sleeps on a cot there and spend some time with him because it makes me appreciate. But I find that man's one of the most sensitive human beings I've ever met.
You got it. Well, here's my point I was going to make. We think that you have to be homeless to be alcoholic. Some of our doctors, some of our lawyers, some of our actually high-powered surgeons, when I say doctors, but surgeons, airline pilots, top executives, CEOs, our alcoholics.
Our own children. That's 50,
that's
20
right.
years old.
And we think... Oh, they can't be alcoholic because they are a doctor, a CEO, my child, whatever. And in fact, they are. And I have found that some of the most creative people that I have met are recovered alcoholics.
I One of the things I want to stress or get out in this particular show is many of us, and I'll just say it, including myself, I have a child that's 20 years old that I know is going down that path. I'm aware of it because I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I've been through all of those treatment programs with my father, so I see it. But another parent might think, oh, they're just having fun, they're sowing their oats. Can you describe what these parents need to look for in their children and help them know they better draw a line or else their children will be this way 20 years
later? They need to look at the eyes, if the eyes are dilated. They need to look at the behavior. They need to look at, are they sneaking around? And I would say, you know, you're not going to be a sneak if you look in the closets and underneath the bed. You can go into their room and look in. And I just talked with a woman this morning, who has a 20-year-old son who had alcohol, had beer cans and whiskey bottles underneath his bed that she found. And she said, Joyce, I don't know what to do. And I said, well, obviously, he needs treatment.
You know, and that they're going to resist it. And you have to, if you love this child, and watch if they have boyfriend or girlfriend problems and they deal with that boyfriend and girlfriend problems by going out and getting plastered, They're relying on that to make them feel better. And
absolutely.
If they rely on it now, they're going to rely on it when they're 40.
Absolutely.
You have to take a strong, put them somewhere.
Absolutely.
You don't give them a choice. They're not wise enough to know that they're in critical danger.
They
here.
Don't know that. And there's, I think, one of the leading forms of death is suicide and amongst our young children, our teenagers.
Take it seriously.
Take it seriously. And these parents, and I know a lot of parents that do this, that their kids are 18, 19, 20 years of age, and they, even younger, and they allow alcohol in the parties that they have for the kids.
You know, when mine was growing up, I would think, well, I'd rather it be here than on the street. But then I realized that I didn't allow it, but then I didn't go and fight it. You know, they would go in the basement and hide and do these things. But then I realized what was going on, and so, I mean, I had to take a stance, and I actually put mine in a boot camp, and he hated it. He called me every name in the world. Then he'd get on his knees and beg. He would manipulate me, whatever he thought would work, and when he saw nothing would work, he submitted. But it wasn't enough. I mean, I still get concerned about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And sometimes there is really nothing you can do except to ask for divine intervention and to keep an eye on them, because they will eventually, nobody falls through the cracks. They'll eventually
hit
their bottom.
Nothing goes missed in the universe.
That's right.
Every atom existing, the resonance is known in the universe. You know, if you can catch them before they reach that age in your state, that's what I did. I mean, I saw that age of majority approaching with him. You know, do it before they reach that age of majority, while you have some control.
Absolutely.
You know, it won't feel good, but you'll drive away from whatever the place you put them in, feeling like the weight of the world is off your shoulders.
Absolutely, absolutely.
If you wait till they're 30... You are literally,
it's not going to work.
You won't even, you know, at least he has some exposure in his mind.
That's right.
You know, and if you wait till they're 30, you will have no control of getting that person into some help, and they'll never get exposure to help if something doesn't happen.
And there's some wonderful programs for teens and young adults. And there's a lot of programs where teen, young adult, and adult recovering alcoholics are also. This is good because the adult alcoholics can take these kids underneath their wing where their mom and dad can't even reach them, can't even give them a hug.
And they will do it, too.
And they'll do it because an alcoholic can help another alcoholic. But somebody who is not alcoholic just doesn't understand it. And this is... Also, you have to remember that if you have an alcoholic in your home, the sickest person in the house has the power and the control.
That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep, and it'll affect everybody for the rest of their lives.
And I also am an adult child of an alcoholic. You are an adult child of an alcoholic. We have to be careful because there's some traits that we have. One of them is that we can be loyal to default. Another one is that oftentimes adult children of alcoholics aren't really clear on their feelings. When you ask them how they are, they say fine.
And it'll make you grow up with no self-esteem unless you have these hundreds of people to caretake to tell you that you're worthy.
That's true. And though the adult children of alcoholics grow up with severe I call them black holes. And it's a feeling of, I'm unworthy, I'm not good enough, I don't look good enough, I'm not smart enough, I don't dress well enough, I don't smile nice, I don't have good teeth, I don't have pretty hair. It goes on and on and on and on. Because their self-image is so thwarted, it has been presented to them by somebody else. I say to people, I do lectures and seminars, and I say, who I think I am is not who I am. It's who my mother and father told me I am.
Mm-hmm.
Who I think I am is not who I am. It's who, in my case, the priest and the nuns told me I am. Or who I think I am is not who I am. It's who my ex-husband told me I am. Now I say to myself, well, who am I? Am I these people? No. And then I've done this for myself in the past, which has gotten me to this young look, is, you know what? I can be whoever I want to be. I can change my patterns, my subconscious patterns. I can do that. And yes, you asked the question about changing playmates and so forth. I'm not going to go to the bar. I'm not going to go to places where I'm going to be tempted.
Change. That's one of the things I hear people say, well, I grew up in a Mayberry town. There wasn't anything to do.
Well, you could go to the museum. You could go to the aquarium.
Organized tennis.
Sports. Yoga. You could do Pilates. You could go to these groups where people just go who are on a spiritual quest, not religion. I'm not talking about religion, because religion gets a lot of alcoholics in trouble. I'm going to mention this just for a minute. And I'm not anti-religion. I'm not taking that away from anybody. But the dogma, the doctrine, and the creed of religiosity, it can become overwhelming. And a child can grow up thinking they're bad.
And they're bound to hell.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, it's not funny, but it's just so true.
It is. And you know, it's really interesting because this is the big bugaboo. They still believe it takes a long time for an alcoholic to understand that God is not a cop in the sky doling out tickets.
That's right. God is an energy. It's not a being.
God is an energy, a power. God is love. God is
you.
That's right. That's right. When I began to find out who I really was, I had worked principle a lot. Principle is laws. But I didn't have the idea that I was worthy. One of the first three steps in a 12-step program is to recognize that you're powerless. And I want to mention this. It's very important. So people say, I'm not going to become powerless. Well, I'm powerless over the ego. And I have come to recognize that that ego will be running riot. Self will run riot. It'll do whatever it wants to do.
Now, for people that don't understand, tell them what ego is.
Ego is that personality, that part of us.
It's not your being vain.
It's not your being vain. It's that part of you that's wrapped up in your personality. And your mental thoughts about yourself. When you go into a 12-step program, you're told to turn your life and your will over to a higher power. That higher power is in you. That higher power can be any power, but you call it a higher power because that takes away the religiosity, that God, the cop in the sky. It brings in the idea that God and I are one. And when I recognize that I am one with God and God is one with me and we are one, then you start to act, talk, walk like you have the power. And you know what? You've actually activated the power in you.
That's true. And if you, you tell me if you think this is wrong, but if you don't know what to do, do something. Get a piece of paper, write down, this is, I want to do, I want to accomplish.
Yes.
Okay, what steps does it take to accomplish X? I want to write a book.
Yes.
Well, I don't know how to write a book. Well, you write it down on a piece of paper first. Doesn't matter what order. And then you don't know how to get the book printed. So you go find somebody who does. Somebody, a mentor, or go to the library and check out a book. But take get something written down, some goals, and you do one of those things every day. And 6 months from now, you won't be where you are now because you've done something.
That's right. I tell people get a journal, and then that journal, dedicate that journal to what you want to be, clean, sober, you want to live a positive, profitable life, you want to write a book, whatever it is.
Even if it's just, I want to live in a clean house.
Yes.
An alcoholic fell out of my house as a trash can. Clean that one room of your house every day.
Exactly. And you start to write out, my goal is. Then you write out a description of it. Then you write out a workable plan.
Scrub the bathtub today.
Yes.
And then do it.
Yes.
Whether you want to do it or not, just do it.
Workable plan, and then work your plan. It just works that way. When you can set up a cause and see the end result, you don't need to know exactly how that book's going to be published the first day. You don't need to know.
That's right. It's like cutting the grass that's a foot high and all of a sudden seeing how good it looks.
It is.
The smell of it.
And
you know, it's so rewarding.
Oh,
it is.
That is true. That is true. It is a fascinating subject. It is a cunning, powerful, and baffling. It is a subject of denial. Most people will deny that they have a problem. Many people go through life, and when they get into their 60s, 70s, 80s, 70s, they don't live much longer than 70, they die.
I mean, that's a long time for an alcoholic.
It is. They
Most
die, that's right,
50s.
They die of complications surrounding alcoholism. Now, here's the other argument, though, that I get. Well, I know my mother or my father drank until they're 85 years of age, or 90 years of age, and drank. There are exceptions. We don't know why, but there are exceptions. Some people can drink.
Well, it's a genetic thing.
It's a genetic thing.
It's been proven that
yes.
There's a genetic structure that's different.
Yes, yes. And but don't let that one person who's living be the example that's going to keep you drinking instead of stopping drinking.
Oh, and another thing, I'm watching this friend of mine attempt to be, it got to the point, he's been through rehab before, so he knows. So I said to him, it's time. You know, you're falling down. You're not taking a bath for 4 days, you know. And so I spent the weekend with him. The wife went out of town, but she didn't understand it. And I spent the weekend while he detoxed at 72 hours, and he went cold. Well, now I've noticed that he went to sipping beers.
Oh, he's back on it.
That's
again.
Right. Then I noticed, like, a month later, he's doing wine.
He's back on it. That's what
you
they
know,
do.
That, everybody does the same. They go to beer. I can do the beer. Well, the beer's not working, so I can do the wine. Well, that's not working, so you'll be right back where you were if you go thinking that you can handle that beer.
That's right. It doesn't take long. It doesn't take long. You know, you can spot an alcoholic in any place or somebody who's got a problem because they can't leave a little bit in the glass or a little bit in the bottle. They have to drink it all.
And they disappear.
And they, yes.
For short periods
yes.
of time.
And what happens with the person who starts drinking again, they think they can drink the one bottle. The next week, they got two bottles. The next week, they got three
That's
bottles.
Right.
And then they're back on it
and
again.
Then they switch to the harder thing.
Yes.
They,
oh, switching.
Beer, wine.
Let me tell you something, sweetheart. Alcohol is alcohol, and it's all ether.
That's right.
It's all poison.
Well, we've got just a few minutes, so one thing I want to tell them, in addition to Joyce's book, Energy Connection, And you can also find it on her website, which is www.joycereynolds, and that's R-E-N-N-O-L-D-S.com, so joycereynolds.com. And another couple of books that I think, and you may have some more suggestion, is Toxic Parents, A Road Less Traveled.
Yes.
And
that's
what is
Maltz.
It, Codependency and Beyond, or Beyond Codependency?
Yes, Beyond Codependency.
Melody Beatty or something.
Out of Marietta, I believe it is.
Is that where she's from?
I think so. There's one codependent book from a lady out of Marietta. But if they go to Barnes & Noble or any of their books, favorite bookstores, and they go to the addiction department, let them just stand there and let a higher power, that God within them, pick the book out, because they'll get the right book. There are so many wonderful, wonderful books out there on alcohol,
yeah, and Colin
substance
Tippett
abuse.
Has a good book called Radical Forgiveness.
Absolutely.
That's why so many people can't stop, is they have something that they refuse. Forgiveness is key.
It is key. It's actually the fourth step in a 12-step program. You have to go through and you have to take a personal inventory to see how your behavior started from birth all the way up to the present moment. And you go in increments. I teach in increments of from 1 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, to see the behaviors. And then to go back and forgive, you have to make amends wherever possible. You have to admit to yourself, to a confidant, and to God that the exact nature of your wrong, what you have done, because many alcoholics have abused, they've stolen, they cheat, they hurt. Alcoholics hurt.
And you know, a thought just occurred to me. You know, I'm a medical intuitive, and you have no idea what you are doing to your children.
That's right.
I've found, not only in my own life, but in the people that I read, if you grow up in an addictive home, you absolutely will have cancer or endometriosis or fibroids or some kind of problem with your reproductive organ if you're women, and prostate or testicular or scrotum problems if you're men, because you grow up lacking nurturing and resentment.
Mm-hmm.
So you are basically planning your children out to have reproductive organ cancer or problems. So,
interesting.
You know, if you love your children, get some help.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And now tell them where they can reach you, Joyce, in case Joyce does seminars that change people's lives. You know, join one of her seminars or visit her website or read her book. Tell them where they can find you and how to call you.
They can call me by telephoning me at 770-642-0161. That's 770-642-0161. And my email is Joyce, J-O-Y-C-E, at JoyceReynolds.com. And remember, the Reynolds is R-E-N-N-O-L-D-S. No Y in there. And they can go to my website, and that's just, they can even go on search for Joyce Reynolds and pull up all kinds of information. But it is www.joycereynolds, again, R-E-N-N-O-L-D-S.
There is a life out there, people. You don't have to spend the rest of your life miserable, and you don't have to spend the current moment of your life making it miserable for those who love you. There's a life waiting for you. Joyce and I both know we've both been there through either personal experience of alcoholism or living with one. There's a life. Agape, my friends, and thanks for joining us this week. Take care, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.